Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Life.
Love. And health.
Where do you get your medical education as a patient and thus build your personal health literacy? So when you walk in the door of a hospital versus being carried into the ER, you can have an excellent idea of what to expect. I'm Christopher Springman. For more and more Americans, it's the internet at places like, well, YouTube. That's right. I'll give you an example. We just did a story on sebaceous cysts, and I prepped by watching a video on YouTube of a surgeon excising, which means removal by cutting, a 20-year-old cyst from the back of a patient, and that cyst oozed an unbelievable amount of oily keratin. Yuck! You might say that's gross. Well, maybe. But 2.5 million other folks watched the same gross video, which is the perfect segue to my next guest, the author of Gross America, your coast-to-coast guide to all things gross. Richard Falk, welcome to Life, Love, and Health.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Now, you're an expert on Gross America, subtitle featuring brains in jars, frozen dead guys, candy-coated insects, and the world's only poop-fueled street lamp, and much, much more. You're an expert on all things gross. Why are we repelled by events, scenes, and things we call gross, but are simultaneously attracted to them? What is going on, Doctor?
I mean, is it trite to say it's our fear of death? But I think it's true that, we become aware of gross things usually when something goes wrong with our body, when something on the inside comes outside, and it reminds us that normally, we think we're in control, we're these brains in a vat and everything's cool. But every once in a while, the body intrudes on us and we realize how little control we have over that. That's terrifying, but it's also fascinating because it makes us aware of how we work, how we break, and how we can fix ourselves.
I mean, there are 310 million people in the United States, 10 billion, I guess, in the world, but we know very, very little about each other, and especially those anomalies.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I know nothing about medicine. It's so specialized, What does any layperson really know about how we work?
Is it a stretch to say or suggest that increasingly we get our health and medical education online and with books like Here Comes the Plug, Gross America?
Absolutely. We get increasingly everything online nowadays. Absolutely.
I'd like to talk about several of the chapters in your book. And these are basically destinations, by the way, places you can visit. And I also refer to Gross America as a bathroom book in the sense, and that's a flattering term.
Absolutely. That's how I'm glad you brought it up, because that's really what I intended it to be.
So what's a bathroom book? You sit down on the potty
and sit down and, you read it in maybe 3 to 7 minute blocks. Is block unappealing word in this context? But yeah, it's just you can pick it up just about at any point and put it down at any point, too, and leave it for days and it's still there waiting.
There is a son of the book coming up. The Son of Growth America, Gross America, The Return of Gross America.
Bigger and grosser.
And one of the places that you're planning to cover in the next book is the University of Tennessee Anthropological Research Facility, better known as the Body Farm. Tell me about that, because that's a good gross place to start.
Yeah, I mean, it is sort of like the successor to these 19th century medical museums, where those used to catalog things that went wrong with people. This is a place where sort of forensic scientists go to push the borders of their science. They just kind of figure out what do we need to know about decomposing bodies, and then they do it. So they'll put gunshot victims out, and they'll bury them maybe in a bush of poison oak, and they'll do another gunshot victim and maybe lean him against a tree, put another in a house. They study the different ways the bodies break down so they can really pinpoint what the cause of death was and what bodies look like in different situations.
The research facility was founded by a forensic anthropologist. However, we have had forensic pathologists on the show, and they are very, very interested in how people die and in what order. And I know that sounds rather peculiar, but these are the people who do autopsies, not the NCIS crowd, but how people decompose, for example, when they're in a shallow grave, when they fall into the foundation of a building is very, very important in terms of determining not only liability but culpability. There are economic and legal consequences to this. That may sound gross, but there's a lot at stake.
Right, and absolutely. And, you know, you find a corpse, you don't know who it is, what happened. There could be multiple possible, you know, reasons for death, and you have to sort through them and find out which really was decisive.
Let's get down to it with the author of Gross America, your coast-to-coast guide to all things gross. He is Richard Falk. Richard, tell us about the Birth Control Museum.
Oh, yeah, that's in Case Western Reserve University, the Dittrich Museum. So they have the world's, what they claim to be is the world's largest collection of historic birth control, which you wouldn't necessarily think is gross, right? But when you realize some of the things people have done in the past, such as using crocodile dung or drinking beaver testicle tea, you can see that there's some pretty unsavory things people have done to avoid getting pregnant.
Well, we all do peculiar things. And so why don't you give us some specifics and let's talk about some of the chemicals that were used initially to inhibit conception.
Well, you know, one of the things they do is not just contraceptives, but they do prophylactics too. And I never really appreciated the difference that one is to prevent conception, prevent babies, and the other one, prophylaxis, is to prevent spread of disease. They have a lot of crazy sort of STD cures in their possession. One of them is something that was issued to the soldiers during the First World War. It's a long rubber-tipped tube filled with mercury cream, and this was to prevent the spread of syphilis.
Oh, I'm afraid to ask you, where does one put that mercury cream?
Well, that would go up the part of one that would be the most likely to come down with syphilis.
Like a vagina? you can use the B word on the air. It's okay. You can also say penis, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was for our soldiers. And it's a really weird historical quirk that they did it. I mean, like, why would you give soldiers VD treatment and not give them condoms? But because of the way the law was written back then, condoms were illegal. They were considered obscene devices, counter to nature, to prevent conception.
Well, there are still people in this country who believe that the common availability of condoms and birth control in general encourages promiscuity. I mean, that's nothing. That's today's headline.
No, absolutely. When I was researching this, I thought, oh, this is kind of a curious historical blip. You know, isn't it great to live when we do now? And, you know, this is what the history of contraception was.
Right.
And, you know, what about the gains? I had no idea that by the time the book came out that contraception would be a touchy political question.
Oh, a touchy political subject, yes. Well, it's, you know, the candidates are discussing contraception, and many of those folks are not wildly enthusiastic about it.
I know. You go to this museum, you'll be grateful for what you've got now.
Let's move right along. Yeah. From contraception to the bowels of the medical archives, something called the Muter Museum. This sounds like a hell of a destination. What is it?
It is. This is the reigning monarch of American medical museums. And we do have a number of them, actually. But this is by far the best. It's got a little, just about any sort of medical oddity you'd see anywhere in the country, they've got one at the Muter.
Well, you know, they have a 139-piece skull collection, a soap person. Oh, man. And jars of brains that have been infected with syphilis. Sounds like a real thrilling place to go for lunch, too.
Yeah, exactly. And it is, you know, you get the right date, it is a good date place, honestly.
Well, there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Tell me, what is your favorite Gross America destination? You've got to have one. Come on. I know everyone asks you this question.
Well, I know. We've just been talking about the Muter, but that really is my favorite because it's such a comfortable museum, which might sound completely bizarre, but, you know, there's the National Museum of Health and Medicine in Silver Spring, which is the nation's sort of medical museum. It's very sterile. It's fluorescent light. It's white. The Muter
Museum. Kind of clinical, huh?
Very clinical.
Hey, there we go.
But the Muter is this just delightfully kind of steampunky, very lush wood and brass turn-of-the-century building.
Our guest has been Richard Falk, author of Gross America, your coast-to-coast guide to all things gross. When you're planning your next vacation, I suggest you buy a copy of Gross America and be sure to take the kids. I know you'll gross them out. I'm Christopher Springman, and you're listening to Life, Love, and Health. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, Christopher.